Guys, I have big news, and it's not the news that you think I'm going to say.
Uh-oh.
I wore jeans yesterday for the first time this season, and it was glorious. It was fantastic.
I've been resisting getting out of my shorts all week.
Oh, I loved it. It was so weird. I've just gotten used to wearing shorts. It's been so hot. And I worked on the Ghia all day yesterday, and I was covered in metal shavings and stunk. And so when I got home, it was starting to cool off, right? So I took a shower, and I'm like, it's kind of cold outside. I mean, like 68, it's not cold. But I can put jeans on, and it was fantastic. You don't know this, maybe, people who are listening, but I love wearing jeans. My favorite, like a t-shirt and jeans is my favorite set of clothing. It's and America if I could just right be there. In that all the time, I would, it'd be good.
I'm trying to comprehend this because I basically only wear jeans. I've worn shorts maybe 3 times this summer. I have it's only jeans. It's just that's my comfortable happy place is in jeans.
I'm with you. But sitting at the soccer fields throughout the summer in jeans like just didn't work. So I've had to commit to shorts. But the times are a-changin', and I'm about to start wearing jeans all the time. I'm excited about that. Actually, it's going to be 90 this week, so,
is it really?
Anyway, down here, it is not really cooling off yet.
Oh, man.
Which is super weird, but anyway. Ooh. What are you guys up to? You wearing jeans, too? Let's talk more about pants.
I've been resisting.
Oh, look at David's wearing jeans.
I've been resisting. I have a pair of cutoffs on. Every morning I wake up, I'm like, oh, it's nice and cool out. And so I try the jeans and the long sleeve t-shirt, and it doesn't work. By the time 11 o'clock rolls around, I'm dying. So that happened a couple days in a row about a week ago. So I've just been wearing shorts and a t-shirt every day. In the morning, I just power through the cold, and then eventually it's just super hot out.
Okay, I've got...
I'm not complaining.
I've been holding this in because I didn't know who to complain to. But okay. I love long sleeve shirts. I love being able to push them up on my arms, right?
Yep.
I don't know why, but that long sleeve shirts pushed up on my arm or folded over, just that's my comfort zone. There are certain shirts where it's got the button on the cuff and then there's another button here. And some of the shirts, that button is placed perfectly. So when you do 2 folds, it stays there all day. There are other shirts where that button is not placed perfectly or comes undone or is not there, and I'm constantly folding it and refolding without the day. I need somebody to point me to a clip, a device that puts that pressure at the perfect place so I get the perfect folds every day.
Or a binder clip.
Or you learn how to sew buttons and buttonholes and you just make all your shirts perfect. That way you pick the shirt that you like, and then you add your own perfect place button.
That's gonna come in perfectly for the topic that we're talking about, is buying tools to do the thing that you want to do. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, though. I like folding those as well. But, yeah, there's a lot of shirts where they just didn't think about that. It's like they had to put a button there, and they were like, just stick it right there. And it's way up close, or it's way back at your elbow, and it makes no sense. Yeah, I'm with you on that. But you got any clothes complaints, Jimmy? Any happiness around clothes? Anything that's new?
I have one of my favorite shirts is from Carhartt, and it's a long sleeve hoodie, but it has a zip up sort of turtleneck. I got it last year when we did an event there. They gave us a shopping spree, and I bought a couple shirts. And it's become my favorite shirt because you could unzip it's like a turtleneck, but it's t-shirt material. So it feels nice and comfortable when you zip it all the way up. I said to Rachel, I go, I look like a waiter in a fancy restaurant when I zip it all the way up because it kind of looks like a Mandarin collar. I call it my Sector 5 shirt because I feel like I'm from the future. Like I'm your host in Sector 5. I'm going to show you to your living quarters. I made that joke when I put it on the first time. and so that's become my favorite long sleeve shirt, and it's that time again of the year. So, it almost feels a little dressy.
Oh,
yeah, but now it's got stains all over it from the workshop, so I have to get a new fresh black one. I look like Sprockets, if anybody, that's a real old reference for SNL fans, Sprockets.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The crazy talk show where people dance.
Want to touch your monkey.
I forgot about that.
But no, I'm happy the season's changing, the leaves are changing, and it's crazy. It's summer's over. I keep thinking we got some more summertime, and we don't. It's over.
I feel like it should be over, but it's still in the high 80s here, which is very strange for this far into September. I mean, it'll change.
It's hot. It keeps getting hotter than I expect it to be. So I expect it, because it's cool in the morning, cool in the evening, and in the daytime you expect it to stay that way. But
Is there a better old guy topic than three guys talking about weather?
How about the weather there, fellas?
Well, I'll get into some man stuff. David, the Mexican carpenter, is here with his team, and they're putting the siding on the horse barn, and it's very exciting. I'm so happy to have such a skilled team on the horse barn. It's been a struggle. Everybody that's worked on it has been fantastic. Of course, Patrick has got his hands all over that place, and he just recently did all the woodwork inside. He did a fantastic job, and I'm going to do a barn update very soon. And a big part of it's going to be the exterior, because I'm working with a company called LP. LP Siding is working with Dave, and then Kyle from R&R Builders is coming back. So Dave and Kyle and LP are going to do a little piece on the building, so that's very exciting. And I'm going to do a piece on the building. So it's so exciting to know. It's like every morning I wake up and I'm like, that barn. Every morning I wake up and it's always like one of the low things. It's like Bob, probably like how the Ghia is in your mind. You're like, you wake up every day and you're like, why did I start that? And
that's what happens.
Every day for the last 7 years, I wake up and I go, why did I get into that barn? But now that second floor building, that second floor workshop has really come together, it's beautiful. It's such an incredible space. I have no regrets, but I just wish I had a little bit more money to throw around, and it would have been in my bank and not in my backyard. But that's all good and well. Obviously, there's lots of equity here. And now that the siding's getting put up, it's really going to be like that. I'm going to wake up every morning for the next like 6 months and go, the barn is 99% complete. It's barn, and the door, that's how the feeling every morning I wake up, and now I'm like, the doors are done, because there's that unspoken list of things to do that, and like, I gotta do the doors on the barn, that's done. And so those guys are out there working, and like I said, there's such a skilled, incredible group of guys that just solve every problem, and nothing is overlooked. It's incredible how they literally solve every problem and figure it out no matter what it is. And so Dave, thank you. And besides that, I'm working on a big set of drawers. Again, my whole life is just stuff in drawers. That's all it is. It's because I have so many little doodads. But when I think about organizing the clean shop, that's what I've been calling it lately, because there's not going to be any sawdust in there. So the clean shop is going to be for leather and sewing and whatever other clean material I want to do in there. I think of all the findings and tools and punches and this and that. And if you go through my videos from the city shop from 13, 14 years ago, I made a little toolbox for my leather work. And then I made a bigger toolbox for my leather work. And then I made another toolbox. And then I made a sliding thing. And then I made a thing on wheels. Now this chest has 48 drawers in it. It's 8 feet long, 20 inches deep, 34 inches high. And it's going to have just a grid of drawers. And that's what I talked about last week. Unapologetically, it's all going to be CNC'd, and it really came together quickly. I don't think I had started it by the time we talked last week.
No, you were about to start it, I think.
So here it is a week later. I'll send you guys a picture, but everybody on Instagram has been seeing it.
Yeah, I saw it like in progress, and it is huge, which got me thinking, did you assemble it upstairs, or did you put it together and then take it up those stairs?
No, it's not upstairs yet. I'm going to finish it in the next day or two. But I'll take all the drawers out.
How are you going to get it upstairs?
Well, that's why I have big double doors on the outside. I could put it on backhoe or something, put it up in the air.
Oh.
The way I got I made that big heavy table a couple weeks ago. So it's got a hardwood, it's got a hard white oak top, and all the drawers with all white oak faces, which I'll put on today. By the time it's done, it's got 13 sheets of plywood embedded in it.
Oh my gosh.
And
what?
And the oak trim and everything. It's probably going to weigh about 800 pounds, 700, 800 pounds.
Wow. It looks awesome, though.
Thank you. Thank you. It's going to really come together. I got some handles from Amazon. I bought two choices. Today I'm going to make the final decision. And it's going to be a catch-all for all random stuff.
You brought that up last week where you can't decide what to buy when you order stuff, so you buy multiple things.
Yep.
You do that almost every project?
Every time. Like when I buy wheels for the go-kart, I'm like, I don't know if these fit. Do those fit? I'll just buy
That's why I need so many drawers.
That's yeah. exactly why. Yeah. And we got those Vidmar cabinets I sent you guys pictures of. And Rob's going around. I have a small mail crate full of hinges from the barn project. Because I couldn't tell what the size is. You can't really get a feel for the girth and the size of these hinges. And they show up and they're too small or too big. So I just thought, let me get that one. Yeah, it's like when you're hungry, you go and you buy, you're like, give me three slices of pizza, the calzone, knots. Yeah, put the knots in. That's what it's like when I'm shopping for hinges on Amazon.
Put the knots in.
So the top's going to come, the top will be removable until it's in place, and all the drawers won't have to go up at the same time. So I can lighten the load as I carry it up. But it is heavy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it's also, because it's all CNC plywood, it's flexible. So that's why I had to put that 2-inch bottom on it that acts like an I-beam. And then, of course, the back on it gives it a tremendous amount of strength. So me flip-flopping it around, it was a flexible egg crate until I put some other stuff on it. So I've got to be careful moving it. It's not going to break. It's just to move it with the drawers in it, it would probably keep it stiff, but then I can't pick it up. So everything's going to work out. But I'm really happy that it's come together here in a week, and that's because I was CNC'd it. The drawers still are a heavy task of assembling each drawer. And now I'm down to, I'm showing you guys the pictures, because of a little discrepancies here and there when I assemble it, the back of some of the drawers might be like 2 or 3 millimeters tighter than the front, or the front might be tighter than the back. So these few drawers that aren't filled in yet, I have to custom fit each drawer. When it's just a matter of sanding or maybe trimming like a millimeter off of the top, and they're all going in. So that everything you see there kind of slipped in easily, and the rest of the drawers will have to be a little tailored to fit. But I'm happy that this is getting done, and it's going to look good. Yeah. It goes back to this little mantra, which isn't really an official mantra, but everything in my clean studio is going to be handmade for the most part, unless I find some real eccentric antiques.
Okay. Handmade with CNC. That's what
yeah. First CNC, handmade first.
Cool.
Well, I did it years ago. I would bring up the topic, and we could dig deep one day. Handmade or mind made?
Whoa! I feel like we've covered that a couple of times.
Yeah. Is it the same? It's not the same. Is it the same?
So David, what have you been up to?
Well, this would be quick and short. I'm still working on the bed project. Yeah. It's like
nothing.
I've been working, but I'm still working on the bed, and we talked about it last week. It's made out of thick 1 1/4 inch walnut, all solid walnut, and I've decided there's no foot board, but there is a headboard, and right now the headboard is made out of walnut plywood, and I'm making it so the headboard is nice, but the headboard is going to be and it's going to look finished when it's done, but then I'm going to redo the headboard in another video because I can't remember if we talked about it or not. There's an ant crawling up my leg, guys. We haven't
talked about that.
Yeah. But I want the headboard to be like the centerpiece of the bedroom. I want it to be like, what the heck am I looking at type thing. So I'm doing a simple one now, and then we're going to do an artful one later.
Cool.
And this bed is heavy. It is. Mm. It's real heavy. One of the things that's slowing it down is I made a change halfway through, or a couple days ago. I bought these bed hardware clips that get mounted on the inside of the frame, and the rails will clip into the other rail. I felt like
I use those.
Yeah.
Cool.
But these ones, it felt cheap like I'm putting all this energy into making this big, beautiful walnut bed that's going to match the end tables that I made a few months ago, or the side tables. And then there's these cheap clips. So I decided to scratch that, and I ordered some, and those should be here today or tomorrow from Amazon, ones that get mortised into. And it's more elegant solution. Nobody's going to see these stupid clips, but I'm going to know that they're there. And it's just going to make me feel better about the whole project. So it's like, man, the details slow me down sometimes, because I just remember my professor in graphic design school saying the details matter. All the details matter. I'm like, all right, the last little thing at the end. So that's what's holding me up.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's the stuff that you'll be happy that you put in the time for later.
Yeah.
Because actually, you probably won't even remember that you put in the time. But if you didn't put in the time later on, those would be the things that really bothered you.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Looking forward to seeing it. So I've been out, speaking of that, I've been out working on the Gia this week, last week and this week, trying to finish up the metalwork on the front end. My goal was to, like, I want to finish, not completely finish the front end, but all the metalwork on one end of the car, and then have a starting point so I can move to the other end of the car and just be done with metal. And so that's my goal. And I had to cut out the entire bottom half of the front end, and I have to do the same thing on the back end eventually. And so it's, you know, a bunch of curvy pieces. I had patch panels to put in for this, but I had to cut out a whole lot and put in a whole lot. And it is so slow. Mm-hmm. It is so annoying. It is frustrating and irritating.
Do you think you can find a volunteer to help you? Like maybe a YouTube friend?
I mean, I probably could, but I don't. And a lot of people suggest that, but I don't want help on it. You know what I mean? Okay. I want to have done it, which is good and bad, I guess, but I'm not interested in having a car that somebody else did a lot of the work for, you know?
David. Would Bob 10 years ago think that this is a slow project, or are you just so used to just pumping out projects every week or every 2 weeks for 10 years?
That's a good question. I think it's slow regardless. But yeah, that probably has something to do with it. And I think one of the things that's frustrating about it is when you do a big project, something that takes a long time, but it's really transformative, you know, and you have steps and you can shoot video of the steps and you see it change from point to point and it's progress. Like, that kind of makes it, you can justify the time and the effort because you see the transformation. In this, it's literally the same thing over and over right here. And then right there, and then right there, and then right there, and it's like tack weld, move over an inch, tack weld, move over an inch, and you do that 100 times, and then you grind it, and then you go back and do it again, and then you grind it, and then you go back and do it again, and then you grind it, and you find all the holes that you left, and then you gotta go back and do it again, and it's just
What might help you is maybe put a sign or something of like a beautiful picture of a finished Gia, so you can keep your mind on the long term goal. You know, this could be a topic in its own, but I see a lot of people that come to me, you know, a lot of people in my life, people that I'm really close with that confide in me about their struggles when it comes to creativity. And a lot of it has to do with they can't see past the tip of their nose, and they're very frustrated with what's happening in front of their nose. I say, keep a long-term goal. Keep a picture of a finished Gia in the shop so that you can keep reminding yourself, that's where I'm going. These are all just baby steps to get to that. You know, like I said, a lot of people get frustrated with the needle keeps breaking, the thread keeps binding up. I'm like, figure it out and keep your mind on the long-term goal. You want to make handbags or whatever it is you want to do. Well, the CNC keeps messing up. I'm like, yeah, that's part of the whole process.
Well, and something else that's in that same kind of vein that I've been thinking about while I've been doing this, because it's the car is on a stand. I can't have it on the rotisserie anymore because I'm working where the rotisserie attaches. So, like, it doesn't work. Which I need to say that in the video. Otherwise, a million people are going to tell me, oh, you should just put it back on the rotisserie. It's on a stand, so the part that I'm working on is about 3 feet off the ground, which means when I sit on a stool, I'm too tall. If I sit on the ground, I'm too low. And so I'm on like one knee, kind of leaned underneath the thing, trying to do this stuff. And so I'm spending all this time trying to get these welds, which I'm just not good at. And I'm trying to do all this welding. I'm trying to make it look nice. I'm trying to get it flat. And so it's frustrating to be in that position. And then I'll stand up and I look at the car and I'm like, I can't see any of the work that I just did. Why am I caring so much about how well the underneath side of the car is done? Not that I want to do a bad job, but like I need some perspective on where my effort is best placed. Putting that kind of effort in on a side panel that you're going to see every time you walk up to the car. Yeah, of course. Take your time. That makes sense. For the undercut that goes underneath the car that you would only ever see if you were somehow underneath the car, like 80% is probably good enough, you know? It's a body filler. So I'm trying to like get some perspective because I keep looking at the entire car as it's got to be done well. And it should be done well. I'm not trying to say that I don't want to do a good job. But it's not all the same. Some places are like beauty marks, and some places are,
you know, like
armpits.
If you're doing floorboards and stuff, you don't have to make it look factory.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm trying to adjust my perspective there a little bit and the like where I'm putting the effort and stuff, but it's just a slow, slow process. And a little bit, you know, frustrating in that when I get all this done and then I step back from it and it's done, I won't be able to see it. Like, yeah, cool. I did good work underneath the car. Yippee. You know,
that's because that's Mr. Jones saying the details matter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Dang it, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. Jones.
So anyway, that's what I've been working on. And I still have a long way to go. I basically have the two side curves, the parts that you can see, are in pretty good shape. And then the cross, like the center section underneath the front, is what I'm doing. One of the most frustrating things about it is, and this is applicable to anything, I guess, when I was doing the step two of 50, I was not careful enough in my, I've got a new patch panel, I'm going to hold it in place, clamp it in place, trace it, and then I'm going to cut away the old metal. And when you do that, you want the new metal and the old metal to touch as much as possible. You want no gap, because then when you go to weld it, if you have a gap, you're just going to burn bigger holes, and then you have to fill those holes. And so when I went to cut this piece out at the very beginning, I was not careful enough about keeping those, the new and the old pieces lining up perfectly. I was a little cavalier on my cutting. And so there are some gaps that now I'm having to deal with. And I'm having to deal with them when I'm 75% through the thing. So I'm frustrated, I'm tired, it's hard to reach, and I'm dealing with my past mistake. You know what I mean? So it's stuff I'm learning. It's stuff that I actually learned before on a different part of the car and didn't retain. So it's a lot of that.
I don't know the exact circumstance you described, but an old timer taught me once, if you have to fill in with a weld, get a chunk of copper. So if you could find a chunk of copper somewhere, use that as like a backup.
I've got some little
and then the copper comes
plates.
Right off.
Yeah, yeah, copper plates with a handle that you can stick behind one
of
those.
Oh, cool. Yeah, those
are cool. And I was watching a video last night, which I want to recommend because it's a good, succinct body panel welding video. But he was talking about having a chunk of copper or a chunk of aluminum, which makes a lot of sense. It would do the same thing, and just, you know, the steel wouldn't stick to it. But the aluminum will soak the heat out of the metal. So when you're doing body work, when you're tacking these panels together, you don't want too much heat anywhere because it will warp the thing. And so if you put a piece of aluminum back there, it sucks all the heat straight through the steel into that aluminum. The problem is the aluminum in your hand gets really hot, so you have to be careful there. But that's a way to draw the heat out of the panel so it doesn't warp. So
that's interesting. You know, I never saw that trick. It's a good one to remember.
Yeah, and I think I probably more likely have a big chunk of aluminum than I would have a big chunk of copper. So I'm going to look today. Anyway, that's what I've been up to. It's been nice to be at the farm. It's been nice to feel like I'm making some progress on the Ghia after a really long time. But, you know, it's also tedious and frustrating. And it's it's also making me, like, my plan was to do a video on the front end, do some other projects, and then the next Ghia video would be the doing the back end. But it is going to literally be the exact same thing, but 10 times worse. Because it's the same replacement with more panels. So now I'm like, do I just skip it, skip the video, and just take a couple of weeks off sometime, you know, in the winter and just get it done or something? I don't know, because I don't think I can make a video about the same thing on the back. And I don't think anybody would care that I didn't make a video about it. I'm just trying to figure out how to... You know, like anything, trying to figure out how to justify getting the work done without it being content.
I'm doing the same thing with the house, where we're ripping up the flooring now, and it's a dirty, crummy, boring job. I filmed 1 minute of us ripping the flooring up, and the next shot is going to be naked beams, because what is the point of me showing ripping up the entire floor, which is going to probably take 3 days, because I also have to make sure we don't fall through it, and make sure we're making safety paths, because we're going to get it down to just the studs, and below us will be the basement. But it's the same thing. It's like, how much do you really need to show people to understand? And somebody who's always done a fun job with that is this old Tony. Instead of showing the boring, mundane, repetitive stuff like cutting material, he always does this magic trick where it's a piece of material, then he karate chops it, and then it becomes three pieces. And the implication is, okay, I cut the metal. But he does it in a fun way.
Yeah. It is interesting, and stuff like that, and I've looked ahead, you know, it's building projects, like the A-frame and stuff. How am I going to do what you're talking about with your house? How am I going to take that, the massive chunks of manual labor that they have to be done, but how do you shoot or not shoot that in a way that, like, moves the video along, gets the point across, covers enough detail to be useful to somebody in whatever way you decide it needs to be useful to them, but then also is interesting? Because it's funny, going back and looking at a lot of woodworking videos from when we all started 10 years ago or whatever, it's an entirely different pace. It's an entirely different coverage for, you know, the voiceovers from us and from everybody else are way more in depth, whereas the appetite for content now is faster and
quicker,
less detailed, and not necessarily about someone wanting to recreate it, but just them wanting to kind of see it being created. Yeah. And it's a different thing. And I'm not sure how I would do what you're talking about, how I would do a big home renovation.
I'm doing a lot of video. I really am jumping through space a lot, because you have to, otherwise it's just going to be too boring. Yeah. I'll jump through space, I'll do time lapses, but if there's a tip in the middle of it, I'll just stop and film the tip. So the time lapse can go, and then, you know, this is a good way to do that, and then keep it short and sweet, and then back to the time lapse. So yeah. I'm trying to find those moments.
That's a great way of keeping people engaged, because a time lapse only works for, you know, so many seconds. But then if there's this crazy interruption with important information, boom, you're staring at your screen again, wondering what is he going to say. So
yeah, so, you know, that's that type of thing is something I'm trying to figure out how to do on the car stuff, because there is going to be so much, you know, just labor that has to be done. Both in the bodywork and when I get to the mechanical stuff. I mean, there's still a bunch of stripping I have to do on the chassis, and there's a bunch of painting, and there's a bunch of
priming. Did you guys happen to see, I forgot all about it. Did you guys happen to see the car that I got this week? I got a 19, it got it really cheap. It was like $1,000. I got a 1947 Cadillac hearse, but the back is cut completely off, right behind the back door. So there is no back door. It's like a cab on a frame, and it's a complete car. It has the engine. Somebody somewhere along the way made it into a flatbed, and the flatbed's gone because I could see the mooring points that somebody sloppily welded onto the frame that would have held the flatbed. And this guy, the guy I got it from, it was local. It was only like 10 miles away. He said he buys cars all the time. He said, I bought a warehouse. He bought an auction at a warehouse, and this was in it. He goes, I thought it was interesting. He goes, but I'm not going to have any time to play with it. The back is cut completely off, and the engine is in there. But the first thing Rob and I figured out is that the engine is seized. So that is the first hurdle, is to unseize the engine. If I can't unseize the engine, then I'm going to have to get a new engine. And then it'll be that. So it's a challenge. Everything about it is stuff that I haven't done. I haven't never in my life unseized a V8 engine. I've never in my life. So Rob took the heads off and we started looking, and all the cylinders look okay except for two of them, and the spark plugs are out. This thing probably hasn't run since the 60s. That's how long it's been sitting. And there's all these little challenges, but I'm up for the challenge. And like I said to Rob, I go, we get it as far as we can. If we can't, we'll just give it away or give it to somebody who knows better. But next August in Eastern, we have the Rat Rod event. It's a weekend where all rat rods come from all over the tri-state area, or will come from all over the Northeast. And I'm hoping to get it running and driving by then. And what the plan is to make the back into a Woody, if I can. It's a real long-term project. Right now, the goal is to unseize the engine. So that's the only focus I have right now. But in the meantime, I'm going to keep this picture in my phone. I'll show you guys so that I could see why I'm trying to unseize the engine. I found a 1948. I know I did a screen grab of it in here somewhere. 1948. I'll send it to you guys both now. It's a 1948 Ford Woody wagon, and I think I could do this to this car.
Oh man!
Wow. I mean, I don't know if I'll get it that perfect, but at least it'll be rat roddy. Gives me an excuse to be sloppy.
Huh. It would be cool to make that. I know you have an idea for this. I'm not trying to step on you.
No, idea. Tell me.
It would be cool to take, because you've already got the hearse with the long bed but nothing on it, to turn that into a camper.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to make that into a, not necessarily a tall camper, but something to take advantage of the length of the car and something you could sleep in, and I don't know.
Yeah, that would be the cool idea, is to make it a Woody, like a weekend-y thing.
Yeah.
Something I admire about what you just said, and I admire about a lot of artists in general, is I want to do this thing, and it doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be cool. I have so much issue with that, and I'm just realizing this lately, is I want everything to be perfect. I want the things to be so good. Like, I'm I was watching this David Lynch documentary the other night, and he's bending some wire into some words or whatever, and it's not perfect. It's just like it's done, and that part of the thing is done. And I struggle with that. I care about every little bend and every little detail, and I'm noticing a lot of the artists that I follow, the work isn't perfect. It's just done. And I don't know how to get to, I don't know how I got to this point. Maybe it's Mr. Jones, Professor Jones, but I don't know how to get back to just completing things and moving on.
It reminds me of a funny conversation I had yesterday. Me and Dave were talking. He came over to the other shop, Dave, the carpenter, and he was watching me CNC. At the end of the day, he passed by on his way to the Airbnb, and he saw me working. Came in, we were talking, and some of the I cut so many parts. Hundreds of parts for the drawers. 48 times four, so that's almost 200 parts. And a lot of them get caught up in the bit, and they, like, I'll come in and they'll all be perfect except for three of them are cut completely in half because they jumped out of the frame while I was cutting. Some of them have a big niche in them. I'm like, that's still a good piece. Some of them have a big gouge. I'm like, it's still a good piece. Mm-hmm. And so Dave saw me, like, sorting through the pieces. And I go, yeah, you know, if I want to, I'll just make all the drawers over another time. He goes, you're never going to do that.
You never will.
But making the chest that carries the drawers, obviously, is the bigger hurdle. Making each individual drawer, I could always get inspired and make 48 new drawers that have different configuration. He goes, yeah, you're never going to do that. Yeah. But that was my excuse of being frugal and still using the parts that, if it was a client job, would have absolutely been rejected because there's a big gouge in it from the router passing through it in the air. So,
there's Go ahead.
I was going to say, in the book, The Creative Act by Rick Rubin, there's a part where it talks about, like, when you get stuck in doing something and you can't finish it because it's not perfect and you keep wanting to refine it and remove things and add things, is you're robbing yourself and you're robbing the world of more art because you're not making new pieces because you're stuck on this old piece.
Yeah, and that's cool. I like that.
That hit me.
Interesting. I was going to say two things. One, it sounds like in the last 20 minutes we've all said the same thing in different ways. You're talking about, you know, being frustrated with that chase for perfection and stuff and trying to figure out how to get out of that. I basically said the same thing about the Ghia in that I'm trying to make something perfect that doesn't need to be perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, the car in general doesn't need to be perfect, but especially the underside of the car. And I think my failure, not my failure, one of the things I'm having to figure out there with the car is, this is the first car I'm restoring. What are my expectations for myself here?
You go to school, like, on the first one.
Is this going to be... Yeah, exactly. Is this going to be a show car? No. This is going to be a car that hopefully my kids can have.
Yeah.
And they can go like, oh, look how bad of a welder dad was. Look at that. It's like right there. Look at that. He's whatever, you know. But I'm not trying to like make money on this thing. I'm losing tons of money on this car. That's not the point. And so the point of the car is not perfect restoration. It's to have
education.
The car.
It's learning. Right. You learn.
And so the other thing was, you know, you were saying, I don't know how to get out of this, that perfection loop thing. What if you started a project that could not, literally could not be perfect? There was no perfection.
You make stuff
because
out of
I think one of the things that you do is you take an ideal, you do a design that is beautiful and sharp and finished, and then you go to create that thing to match that ideal design. What if you start with something that the end result that you're trying to get to is imperfection? Maybe that's through the materials, or maybe that's through just where it goes. I don't know. But
it's really funny that you brought that up, because one of the projects that I'm in the sketch phase for is making some sort of like beautiful box with all of these pieces, but none of the joints are, it's purposely like not square. The joints don't come together correctly. There's weird glue. Like, I want to make something that's completely imperfect, but also like crazy beautiful. And you can see all this time and effort put into certain parts of it, and then other parts of it are just nasty. And there's supposed to be this contrast. Maybe that's the piece that will get me out of it.
Interesting. But what will be the how will you qualify that being done?
How do I qualify anything from being done? That's the hard
part.
Well,
exactly. But oftentimes, if you have an ideal of what the whole thing is going to look like, sharp, finished, sanded, everything, that's your ideal. And so when you do a project, you're deciding how close to that you're willing to go. Yeah. You know, because you can always keep sanding and always keep whatevering. But eventually you get to a point to where you're like, it's 95%. I've decided that's as close as I'm willing to push myself to that. So if you have something where the ideal is imperfect, how do you measure, like, how close you are to the end? Where are you willing to be like, yeah, it's good enough. It's weird enough. It's bad enough. It's, you know.
Right. It's bad enough. The ultimate struggle.
Yeah.
In this bed project, there's a huge difference between when I work with a set goal and plans and when I work on the fly. Like this bed has been completely drawn out. I will know when this bed is done because it's going to look like the thing that I drew up. The calculator project, the video coming out in the next couple of days, that didn't have a plan. And that one took forever because I kept adding things and kept removing things. And there was no, I didn't know what it was supposed to look like when it was done. So it just kept going on and on and on. And I should have sketched things out sooner. So there was a defined point. There was a defined finish line. This is another therapy session for me.
Well, before we started recording, you said you made a comment about an idea that you had for a topic around your own work. Do you want to? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of related, I think.
Yeah, I've been struggling with not liking some of the things that I've made recently. I think most people who build things will find that it's not perfect, or they can do better. And I've always had that, but there's been a couple things recently I'm like, I could have done a lot better. I am not real happy with sharing this piece with the world, because I know I can do better. And I've had a couple of those things lately. And I wanted to, that was a topic that I was suggesting. And I didn't want to get into details of what projects, just because I didn't want people to go back like, well, you could have do this, because I feel better when the solution is my idea, and then instead of somebody telling me their idea, it just, I feel like I have ownership when I come up with the idea. I've just been struggling because I've been trying to push myself more into design and stuff, that I missed the mark. I feel like I've missed the mark more recently than I have in the past.
And this is just a general question. Is that all internal? Is that feeling all coming from inside you, or is it a mix of inside you and like external opinion
stuff? No, it's all internal. It's funny, because if I don't like something and I put that video out, there's rarely any negative comments about the design, you know. It is all internal. It is all me. A lot of it comes from a good place. I just want to do better. I want to get better at the thing.
I don't know that I'm ever real super happy with the stuff that I make. I mean, I guess I'm happy with parts of it, you know. I'm usually happy with the idea more than the execution on most of the things. I guess. I don't know. Jimmy, you have any thoughts on... Do you feel that way at all? I kind of feel like Jimmy just probably moves on to the next one.
I'm really good at being like, okay, that was a learning experience. What's next? I'm really good at that. I say it in my Patreon a lot. I say I am my own client, so I overlook a lot, and that's really just to get through stuff. I've also spent so much time making things for television that we only have a limited amount of time. There's three stages of work for me personally. It's real television time, when I'm like a real television network show, like the Netflix show, where it's like absolutely good enough for camera. Doesn't matter. It's going to go in a dumpster eventually, or someone's going to try and save it because it looks beautiful and they think I did a great job, but it was made on TV. That's why I always say, if you have an opportunity to have your kitchen made over by a TV crew, don't do it. There are so many corners cut for time that it is absolutely not worth the freebie. So there's the TV. The middle is my YouTube, because most of the stuff I'm making is for myself. So I'll overlook. I even said it in my Patreon. I made the top for this cabinet, and it's all sapwood. So it's like beautiful, like riffs on white oak with two big white strips on it. And I wouldn't have given that to a client. I would have went and got another piece, got rid of the two strips of sapwood, and made it all one tone. But for me, I'm okay with that, because it doesn't really matter. It's going to look fine on camera, and it's going to actually last. All the CNC drawers with the mistakes and the chips and the nips from the CNC jump outs, it's fine by me. But if it was for a client, I absolutely would never let that happen. Little tiny gaps, you know what? I'll fill it with a close color wood color. It doesn't matter. Wood filler. But if it was for a client, I'd strip it off and cut another one that was long enough. So there are these different things that I can really compartmentalize. It's for me, it's fine. And then I also think of that like legacy, like, okay, in 100 years from now, is this still going to be in some antique shop or somebody's barn? It'll still be good enough to hold together. TV props will be dust. The client projects hopefully will still be being nurtured. My projects in 100 years from now will still be 90%, 80%. And that's how I think of the three phases of the way I make things. TV, garbage, YouTube, much better. Client work has to be on point, otherwise I'm not getting paid. And I can discern each one of those stages pretty easily and move through quickly.
Interesting.
Do you, know what you're working on next? After you finish the thing, do you know what you're working on next?
No, not at
Bob,
all.
Bob, do you?
Vaguely.
Vaguely.
Why?
No,
I'm just curious if, because I think having the next project ready to go helps you complete the previous project. This is something that I'm learning recently, and I was just wondering, you know, our lives depend on continuing to make videos, and some people, and it makes me feel bad about myself, but you see these big YouTubers are like, yeah, we've got the next 10 videos lined up and they're in the writing phase and blah, blah. You know, I don't work like that. And I don't think I ever can. I'm working on now. And then sometimes when I finish this project, I don't even know what I'm going to make next. And I need a day or two to figure out what that is. And I think I just want to push myself just a little bit more so I know what the next project is. I at least have a sketch. So I
know
have a
I'm
going to
do
finish.
Episode 7 of the house build. I know that has to come out soon. So I told a couple of my partner clients on that. I have a couple of sponsors on the house now. I told them it's going to be probably my next video after this. So in a week from now, I'll throw together, or a week or 2 weeks, I'll throw together an edit for episode 7 of the house. I'm at a point now where there's enough changes and enough decisions to be made and a couple of announcements. So that's kind of it bubbles to the top. But as far as the next physical build, I'm not sure. I'd have to go through my list of 2024 projects and pull something out of my behind.
So, like, that whole idea of having the next few things in progress or whatever, I have a list of upcoming stuff that I would like to do. Mm-hmm. I don't typically, like, have them really locked in for what they're going to be and when they're coming out. I used to, but I'm just trying to loosen that up for myself a little bit.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that the stuff that is not fly by the seat of your pants, the stuff that requires a design or, you know, mechanical understanding or something, those things take time. And where if I finish a video before I start that design mechanical stuff, that puts a big gap in between starting the next thing. And so I'm struggling a little bit with how do I do the manual labor of welding these stupid patch panels on, and at the same time do the research about the weight ratings and stuff of the thing that I'm thinking about next, and how do I get all the pieces, and what if I don't plan that correctly, and then I try to throw it together, there's like literal danger involved if I don't do the prep work that I need to do for that next thing. And yeah, so I struggle a little bit with that, but I run through the ideas that are, I'll figure it out tomorrow. It's no stakes. I can sit down and design something and just print something, and it's, you know, I've run through those ideas really quickly. And so the things that sit on the list are the things that need attention and need time. And yeah, I mean, you just have to put those time into those things. You know, me loosening my schedule over the last couple of years has helped a lot there, because it gives me, I give myself a little bit more grace in that, rather than trying to rush into the next thing, I know that I have to design it. So it means I'm gonna skip another week. Oh well, you know, but I'd rather be a week late than dead, because I didn't, you know, I didn't like plan hard enough for how strong this thing will be or whatever. So
I have this. I don't know what the end point is, but I have this document. It's titled "How to Be Creative When You're Not." I don't know if it's going to be a future video. I don't know if it's going to be a book or a course or whatever. But it's, and I don't even know that I am the person to write this. But I've been just creating this. I've been adding to this document for about 6 months now. And every once in a while, I'll go back and I'll rewrite some things and I'll phrase some things. And I'm writing it as if I'm going to make a book someday. Probably won't ever. Probably be a video. But I wrote down three things in a note that I need to add to this document and expand on. One, you mentioned, you called it the perfection loop. And I think that is a great phrase, and I want to expand on that. And then another thing is, I wrote this down, this needs to go in the document. Know what the finish line is before getting started. I think that's going to be really important for me.
Cool.
And then the last thing I just wrote down is have an on deck project.
Mm. Well, yeah. I usually, whenever I'm working on anything, I just worry about the finish date mostly. Yeah. And that really keeps me on point. This video will probably be out Sunday morning. There's no client in it, and I haven't made anybody a promise, so it's either Saturday or Sunday, wherever I get to. But most likely Sunday, because I could relax a little bit and really take time to look at that finished edit. That's another thing, is I look at that finished edit like four or five times. I show it to friends, I show it to Rachel, and get some feedback before I lock it for good.
Do you normally show it to other people before putting it out?
Yeah, lately Rachel will always take one good look at it, because she's an art advisor, so she has really good feedback. Hmm. She's been in the art business for years, so she'll give me some high praise, or say, you know what, it was a little slow in this section or another, and then I'll make a couple of adjustments.
Are you in the room when she's doing this?
Yeah, I'll play it for her.
So I think we've talked about this before, and this is also in the Rick Rubin book, The Creative Act, of like showing your work to a trusted person while you're there, because you start to look at your own work in a more critical eye than you would like when you're at the editing desk. Like if I was showing my video to somebody else in the room right now, I would be like, oh, that's cringy. Oh, why did I gotta fix that?
I know exactly what you're saying. It is so true. Whenever I give anybody a tour, so, you know, a fan or a friend or a family member that wants to come and see the house and all the things that we've built and that I've done here and whatever, I'm walking around. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. This is where I keep my leather. You know, like the whole time. But I don't see it until all of a sudden somebody else is seeing it with me, and I'm like, oh yeah. No, I didn't know the cat threw up there. I didn't know that. You know, it's I'm walking around showing. I'm like, this is usually clean, but but it's the same thing with the edit. It's like, I didn't really mean to. I should cut that out. And immediately something jumps out to you because somebody's looking at you like side eye, like, what is that? I'm like, I cut that out. I'll get rid of that. I thought it was funny. It's not funny. Yeah, it's definitely important to watch it with somebody right there and then, just to see. It puts a mirror on you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, other thoughts on this?
I didn't see the cat throw up
there. We didn't even get to the topic that we were going to talk about, so we'll save
That's
it.
That's true. Yeah.
What was it? I forget. Buying stuff?
Buying stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We'll I actually things. Wrote it down. So as long as I don't throw away this piece of paper.
We have something for next week.
Yeah. Cool. Well, any other thoughts on this before we wrap it up?
You know, I've said it 100 times. You could always make it again. So if you're moving through something, you're having trouble with it, you could always restore another car. You could always make it again. Don't get too pinned to any one project.
Somebody asked me the other day, like, what I've learned or how I would go about starting the Ghia differently now that I've done some of it. I feel like I'm like 2% in, but, and the biggest thing, and anybody else that's looking for a car, thinking about car restoration, take your time to find the right one to start with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that I could have paid the exact same money and gotten one that was
not right.
Easily. Half as bad.
This car that I have now is a complete art car, so I don't care anything about it. And but if I'm going to spend $10,000-$15,000 on a used car, my new goal at my age is absolutely no rot. I look at so many cool Cadillacs. I'm like, oh, that's cool, and it's like, oh, the floor's been replaced. It's completely no longer a candidate. If there's any rot, I will only buy a car now that does not have rot in it, because of what you're going through, Bob. I've been there 100 times where it's like fixing to this and fixing to that. Unless it's a rat rod and I'm not caring about it. But if I, for instance, the Mercedes-Benz that I bought, if there's so many of those, and there's not, that car usually doesn't have any rot in it, but the previous models do, the smaller, sportier ones from like the 70s through the 80s. If I see them and they're cheap, and I still want to get one of those. But if I find one that's within striking range and I see and there's a little bubble on the fender, I'm like, absolutely not interested.
You want to focus on the creative stuff, not the fixing stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think with the green Land Cruiser, when I get to that one someday, the whole plan from the very beginning is to not rebuild the existing body, but to buy a new... You can buy, like, the tub, which is the steering wheel back, is one piece. And they get remanufactured in China and in Canada, and you just have one shipped. And it's expensive, but you get a crate with the car on it. And you just take the body and you put it on the frame, and then you paint it, and you're like good to go. So that's my plan with that one. I'm not going to mess with like patching and of that stuff.
I would watch a video on that because that sounds very interesting to me.
Yeah. I'm counting on that one view from you when I do that one of these days.
That being said, about rot in a car, if the car is extremely rare and it's hard to, it's impossible to find one in its proximity, I'm like, okay, I'll deal with the rust because it's close, affordable, attainable.
There's always an exception.
Always. Nothing's perfect.
Yeah, well, that's true. All right. Well, big thanks to our Patreon supporters for letting us talk about this stuff and for always supporting the show. We always get messages. I've gotten a couple of messages over Instagram this past week. Just people, I don't know, thanking us for still doing the show and for just being really nice. So I want to thank our Patreon supporters for making that possible, because they make it possible. Big thanks to Crabtree Creative, Michael Menegin, Warren Works, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, Sean Beckner, Odin Leather Goods, Rich at Lowen Design, Chad's Custom Creations, Chad for Mancrafting, Works by Solo, Albers Woodworks, sorry, and Corey Ward. But also people like Ryan LaValley.
Thank you, Ryan.
There's a lot of people that support us, and they all get the after show at every level. So, supporter at a dollar, you get the after show.
Bob, are you going to talk about that picture you sent to show?
I am going to talk about that picture that I sent. I sent the guys a picture yesterday.
Did you get more news?
No, but we're going to talk about it in the after show.
Okay. I can talk about my AC fix, too. There's a slow.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, excellent. Good. But seriously, they make it possible, and they get the extra show of us talking about other stuff that doesn't make it here. So if you want to join that crew, you want to get that show, go to patreon.com/makingit.
Remind me, I got to ask you guys, we have to set up an advertiser. We're going to set this guy up to fall on his face, and you guys are going to help me. I'll tell you in the after show what I'm talking about. We're going to set up a sponsor, and you guys are going to help me. I'll tell you about it in the after show.
Okay. Huh. Okay, sound like a threat, but sure.
It is.
Okay.
No, it'll cool. be all well, behind the scenes. It'll be just after show stuff.
Okay, so if you want to find out what that is about, go to patreon.com/makingit and help us out. I will not be a part of anything illegal. I'm just going to say that now in the public show.
This is totally innocent. Someone's going to walk right into a glee trap.
Okay.
Or not.
Okay.
Maybe he blew the coop. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay. I don't know what you're talking about. So, my pick this week is... Do you remember the band OK Go?
Yeah.
You've heard of the band OK Go. And I don't know that they've put out anything in a while. I haven't really looked. But me and my kids were on YouTube the other night looking at something. And one of their OK Go's amazing music videos showed up. And I'm like, oh, have you guys ever seen this? And they're like, nope.
That's so the one with the Rube Goldberg, right?
They have so many. Oh, yeah. We spent 45 minutes watching music videos from this band that they had never heard of, and the whole time they were just like, what is this? What? You know, and I'd seen a few of them, but there were quite a few that I hadn't seen. And watching even the ones I've seen, watching them again, it just blows me away at how much effort they are willing to put into making a music video. Obviously, there's a lot of money, you know, somebody sponsoring most of the videos and stuff to make them possible. But the planning, the orchestration, the creativity that goes into just getting something like this started, any of these, is pretty mind-blowing. So there was a few of them. I'm going to put the channel. You go watch a bunch of them, but I'm going to put the channel in the show notes. But just so you know, there's a giant Rube Goldberg machine that is the entire music video is following a single shot, following this ball and stuff going throughout the entire thing. It's crazy. It's in a warehouse. It's huge. There's one where they are in the Vomit Comet plane, so they're basically anti-gravity or like no gravity for most of the video, and they're dancing around and floating, and all sorts of stuff is happening in this plane cabin, and it's unbelievable. They have one that I hadn't seen before where they're on those little like single wheel sit down scooters, and they're dancing on those things, and they have umbrellas, and so they're like spinning umbrellas and stuff. And so you're like, oh, that's kind of neat. And then some other people come in from the side, dancers, and they have umbrellas too. And then the camera that's in front of them on the ground all of a sudden like picks up and goes up in the air and is shooting them from overhead. And then it comes back down, and then there's more dancers, and then it goes back up, and then it ends up like, I don't know if it's real or not, but it ends up way up in the sky looking down at a parking lot with hundreds of people with colored umbrellas dancing and creating patterns and stuff on the ground.
Oh, wow.
It's just, it's wild. So there's those, there's one where they drive a rally car through an outdoor course, and they're using the car to play notes on pianos and guitars and stuff as it passes by. It's just craziness. That's super cool. Creative. And at the same time, like we talked about, none of it's perfect. There are problems, there are little things, there are issues with, but the creativity and the effort shines way past any imperfection in these things. Incredible. So go check those out.
I have one little gripe about music videos in general. I've always, even as a kid, watching MTV in the 80s, I hated when the sound from the whatever's happening on screen overpowered the, like, came in and interrupted the music. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
they like bring you into the moment of the action.
Yes,
horribly.
I didn't want that. I wanted
Michael
the music
Jackson
to be
always
pure.
Did that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It made it feel like more like a movie with a soundtrack versus a music video.
Yeah.
The Rube Goldberg one is interesting in that way because I don't think it does that. Well, it does do that a little bit, back and forth. So there's a piano. There's a point where they drop a piano from like a couple of feet off the ground, but it hits the ground and then falls over and crashes. But the sound that it makes and a bunch of the other sounds, they're like part of the music. It doesn't feel like it's what you're talking about. It doesn't feel like it's a separate action. I don't know. It's wild. I'll stop gushing on them. They're pretty incredible. Video makers. The music's pretty good. But
I was going to suggest Sean Beckner. He did a very, very beautiful video on getting into sign making in the shop and tools and stuff. And he really puts on display his skills that he's learning and really doing really well at. And I see that and I think of all the things I should be doing. And he's always inspiring me and sending me little bits and pieces of things. He's like, this would be cool. That would be cool. So Sean, thank you. And his experimentation has really turned into a beautiful skill set. So check out Sean's latest video on getting into sign making.
Cool.
And his video graphics are very, very, very well done.
Oh yeah. He was posting about the, he sent us the Final Cut thing. Where did I see that? I think it was on Instagram. He posted and tagged you in, like, showing the power of using tracking and stuff in Final Cut and how easy it was. That's what it was. I didn't realize it was for that video, but I guess it probably was.
Yeah, it's got a lot of good transitions and titles and stuff. Very cool. Well done, Sean.
What you got, David?
And the mine is a smaller channel called Idea Farm. In the video that I discovered through that YouTube gave me was he's making a DIY studio mixer in Patch Bay. It's a woodworking project, and it looks like he is building a studio. So his channel is music and woodworking together. He looks like he's building a studio. So I just discovered this. I don't know much about it. I've only kind of skimmed this video, but it's in my watch later, and I'm interested in what this guy's doing. Looks really cool.
Yeah. Big Barn Recording Studio.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's like it kind of looks like Jimmy's Barn, that type of shape, but turning it into a professional recording studio.
Wow.
I'll send you guys pictures of what David's doing. He has to cover the building.
I also remember that channel this reminded me. I mentioned a couple weeks ago that there was another YouTube channel I wanted to start that I probably would never start.
Mm-hmm.
This recording thing just reminded me of that. I'm going to tell you about that in the after show.
Okay.
All right. You guys got anything else?
No. There's I tell you another. There's another story that happened offline that was very interesting. I'll tell in the after show.
Oh, wow.
We got three things to talk about. Three little teasers.
Packed one. Cool. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you later.
No.
There you go.
Love is so weird.